Hey everyone, I'm Johnny.
I'm Victoria. Welcome to Tasty Pages, a podcast from Cooking the Books.
Each week, we'll discuss a featured cookbook.
And we'll rank each book in a variety of categories, including food photography and styling, degree of difficulty, and of course, taste.
This week's featured cookbook is...
Everyday Dinners by Jessica Merchant. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, hot stuff. What's happening?
Not much.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. We're day drinking, kind of.
It's late.
It's late in the afternoon.
Late day.
But we're starting earlier than we normally do.
Yeah, we had a cocktail to photograph, so
cheers.
We're like, cheers.
Yeah.
So Johnny is drinking.
We had a podcast to do, so.
What is that cocktail you're drinking called?
It's called like the Back 40, I think.
Back 40, yes.
And it's from a book that's a food memoir, mm-hmm. but it has recipes scattered throughout. And so as part of our obligation to promote it, we did a drink recipe from the book and mm-hmm. did a photograph.
Yes.
So you'll see that in our social media soon.
Tell them what is in the cocktail.
So it's bourbon, a little bit of lemon juice, some maple syrup, simple syrup,
mm-hmm.
and then we garnished it. Oh, and it's got orange bitters,
mm-hmm.
and then we garnished it with these really cool
candied oranges.
Yeah, dehydrated candied orange slices from good old Trader Joe's.
Yep.
And what are you drinking?
I am just drinking a bourbon ginger ale, a short one.
Classic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to Tasty Pages, episode 47, podcast from Cooking the Books. I'll get a few things out of the way per usual. If you go to our website, which is wecookbooks.com, you'll see a store tab that you can click on that will direct you to our amazon.com affiliate page. And this is probably the most effective, direct, immediate way that you can support what we do. So rather than us standing out in the corner panhandling, you can just go to that Amazon tab and click either the Kitchen Essentials for Home Cooks list or the cookbooks list, and for every purchase you make, we'll get a little something in return. Best of all, it does not cost you a penny more. You'll get a little something that you're looking for. You'll support us in the process. What could be better?
You really stretched that one out, didn't you?
I did.
Making the most of it.
I'm a hustler. All right. Let's talk about what we're working on right now.
Yes.
We finally moved on to a new book.
I
think the last few episodes we've been discussing the previous book we were working on, and we finally finished it.
It took a while.
The Dada Eats.
Yes.
That was a good one. So mm-hmm. we'll have a full report coming up for that. What are we working on now?
We are currently working on Chinese Food Made Easy by Ross Dobson.
Classic Chinese name. I guess... Chinese Food for Dummies was taken already.
I have to say, I really am liking the book, and everything seems really copacetic and authentic to me. But I still don't think I'm okay with, like,
I've got some
this
thoughts
on white
it.
Dude.
Yeah.
Being a,
well, we yeah, don't need to okay. go down the rabbit hole now. I've got some thoughts on it.
Yes, I know.
We'll talk about it when the time comes. Oh, we also finished up, finally, another book that we had kind of been working on over several months, weeks.
I feel like it's been like half a year.
It's been a long time, but but it was only because it was a baking book, and like dessert and cocktail books, we generally kind of break them up into a longer span, so we're not eating baked goods every day or drinking every day. So Flour, Water, Salt, Yeast by Ken Forkish. And we made some good stuff out of there. So
actually, I made one thing from it. The rest of it was all you, except for the first time you made bread.
Yep.
I decided to like horn my nose in and be
That's
like,
fine.
No, because you got pissed off at me. And you're like, this was supposed to be my project.
Yeah, well,
and then
I got to put my science cap on for this.
But and then I think I ended up finishing the first couple. I ended up finishing the first couple loaves, but then it was all you.
The assist.
Because the book is very, very specific, really wordy, and I just, like, right now I don't have the mental bandwidth for it. But we got some great loaves of bread. I made some cookies from it yesterday.
Yeah. And then we went and did a little fire pit with some close friends of ours. Mm-hmm. And probably one of the last kind of social gatherings that we'll do in Chicago before our big move, which we talked about last episode. So if you haven't listened to that yet, check it out and you'll get all the details.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Once we are done with once we're done with the book that we're working on, we are going to pack up our kitchen, pack up our pantry, and then we are going to live on takeout.
And delivery.
And delivery, yes.
And salad in a bag.
Salad in a bag.
It's going to be like we're touring musicians or something. Right? It's going to be awesome.
Babe, I got your bag of salad.
Yep. That sounds weird. So you probably won't notice any hiccups on the Instagram feed because we do work in advance and we've got plenty of stuff available to share with you during our move. But behind the scenes, this will be the final book in our Chicago home until we move. Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe we'll incorporate more like takeout, restaurant, delivery reviews and you know, showcase some of that once we move.
Sure.
That could be a fun little project.
I'm game
in addition
for anything.
To the cookbooks. We need to branch out from cookbooks, right? Even though that's kind of the core of what we do. We have other interests in the food community, so stay tuned. What's for dinner tonight?
For dinner, we are doing hot and sour soup from Chinese Food Made Easy. And hot and sour is it is my favorite soup, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
It's good to know.
Mm-hmm. And I also love tom kha gha, too. That would be a second, and then I think my third favorite soup is just like...
Wow. You've got a laundry list of favorite soups. I might have to think for a second. I do like a good pozole.
Oh, yeah, pozole.
See?
Pozole pulling growing. Up in the rear, yeah. Third place, pozole. Yep.
All right.
That was a nice little
thanks for listening to Soup Talk. And for once, it's not 90 degrees here in Chicago.
It's gorgeous. We have our windows open.
We'll be able to enjoy this soup without... sweating. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be like you won't be sitting over the bowl, your nose is running, you're kind of sweating, and you're like, oh, this soup is delicious.
Gross. All right, let's move on to this
He's so
show topic.
Annoyed by me.
No, I'm not annoyed at all. I love you.
I love you too, babe.
All right, favorite cake flavor was our show topic for this episode, and we put this out to social media. We got some good answers, and I had to actually kind of think on it a second because it wasn't something I'd really considered previously. And
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Do you?
I do.
Okay. you want to start with the listener answers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Beth B. said carrot cake with cream cheese frosting.
Classic.
It is. But I'm so picky about carrot cake, though, because I've had, you know.
I kind of like when it's got a bit more assertive spice to it.
I do, and it has to be... moist.
No, I get
I've had far too many bad carrot cakes, but I know how good a good carrot cake can be, so I like still really love it.
And I like the cream cheese frosting on it, but in moderation, because generally it tends to be kind of sweet. And so if you put this big, thick, heaping layer on there, I feel like it tilts it more into that territory for my personal taste.
Oh, I've got thoughts on that too.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
Okay. Jeff C. said minimal chocolate frosting, as we just discussed, vanilla cake. And he said, what can I say? I'm basic.
You know what? I love it.
I'd say you're classic,
that,
Jeff.
Yes. And that sounds so fucking delicious right now.
Yeah.
Yum. Yum. We Indie Kitchen said vanilla, pineapple.
Whoa.
Both very emphatically.
Yeah. I had not considered pineapple. That sounds lovely.
I was going to say I've never had a pineapple cake, but I've made several
pineapple upside down
cakes.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. That sounds good. At Books by Brooklyn's said Victoria Sponge. Do you know what that is? I don't think I know.
Yes. Yes.
British thing?
It is a British thing. I've made one probably two times in my life when I've like did my pastry block.
Okay.
And I think I actually had to do one for a final. And other than that, like, I feel like the only exposure that Americans get to a Victoria sponge is by watching the Great British Bake Off.
That's probably my point of reference. Yeah. Got to turn my ringer off. We're running a professional operation here.
Who's the unprofessional Balmer? Right?
At the Spaghetti Podcast said Red Velvet. Another classic
one. It's another favorite
one. It's been a hot minute since I've had a Red Velvet cake.
I know.
All right. What else you got?
Maxwell Gregory 2018 said coconut.
Interesting. That was in regular rotation in my childhood for Easter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My mom
the lamb
that
cake.
That or like an Easter bunny shaped cake. And then it would always have like the
coconut for the fur.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was just reminded of that. What do you got for your picks?
Mine, it has to be a naked cake because I really because I don't love frosting. But my first choice is vanilla with funfetti and cream cheese frosting.
Okay.
Yes, like a funfetti vanilla, really vanilla-y cake.
Sure.
And then my second is a coconut cake with lime curd filling and a coconut cream cheese frosting.
Nice. That's very sophisticated.
Wait, can I guess yours?
Sure. So I have two. One is from my youth.
Which is German chocolate.
Yep. And then this is
I
like
made it for your birthday. Man. Trace Leches.
Yep.
Yes.
Did you peek at my answers while I was gone?
No.
Yep. You just know
I love
so
you
well.
And I know you.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was growing up, German chocolate was kind of my go-to cake if I could put in a request for like a birthday or something.
I've made him several German chocolate birthday cakes.
And then they would always appear in the form of like, I remember one year I got a hockey cake with like hockey players on it, you know, when you could go to the store and get all the little figures to put on the cake.
I mean, you can still do that.
Yeah. they have those, huh?
They do.
They didn't do away with them. Where have I been?
You're so cute.
There's this place called Michael's, dumbass.
Shut up.
So then motorcycle. I remember I got a motorcycle cake, which is kind of funny because like I was a little kid. I guess maybe I liked
get
motorcycles.
I get being a kid liking motorcycles.
You know, in my adulthood, then I rode motorcycles all the time and got really into it. But I don't remember being really into motorcycles when I was a kid.
Really?
Maybe I was. I don't know.
Wow.
Hockey. I thought I was going to be a hockey goalie.
I know.
I played hockey all throughout up until high school.
And I still can't believe that you were the goalie. That is the most insane position. Like, you're just inviting people to hurt you.
Yeah, the thought of standing there while someone shoots a hard rubber puck at my head as hard as they can terrifies me now. But back then, I was fearless.
You were a real dumb kid.
Yep. And when I was a kid, I thought that I was going to be the goalie for the Minnesota North Stars. And then they broke my heart and moved away from Minnesota to Texas of all places.
The Minnesota North Star is like the only sports jersey that I've ever owned.
Really?
Yes.
That's okay. Because I'm going to make a statement here and I don't care who disagrees with it.
And I'm going to let him go off, but I'm going to say I fully 1000% agree with him.
There's nothing more unsexy than, and this applies to men and females, so don't take this as like some kind of sexist thing, but there's nothing more unsexy than like adults in like oversized jerseys, like hockey jerseys and football jerseys and stuff. And I'm that's my hill. I'll die on it. Fight me.
I won't fight you.
Yep. Unless you're playing on the team out on the field, you have no business wearing that ugly, ill-fitting jersey. Hey, if you want to put a t-shirt on that has like the logo, support the team, I'm fully endorse that. Go for it. You're at the game. Go nuts.
See, and I think that's a good compromise.
Baggy, dressy. Oh, I'm getting all worked up over here. Man.
Oh, ew.
There's nothing more disappointing than seeing like a really attractive person in a fucking jersey.
When I was a football cheerleader in high school, all the girls had football jerseys made and we would wear them with our skirts and oh my god, how
of course
hideous.
You did.
Like
gross.
Okay.
Yeah, so German chocolate, tres leches. I like to think my tastes have kind of evolved since childhood.
I love a good tres leches.
Oh my god. It's a favorite. So let's jump into Everyday Dinners by Jessica Merchant.
Let's do it.
This was interesting because we got this book, and upon first glance, we're probably not the target audience for this book, nor would it be something that people might initially think that it would appeal to us.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got past the kind of, you know, busy, like simple, quick recipes for a busy family narrative, I was like, these recipes actually look really good.
And, yes.
And I was really excited that the largest chapter in the book was devoted to like meatless meals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we excitedly dove in without hesitation, and we were not disappointed overall. Correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else to add before we talk about the dishes we made?
No, but I do have to say, like, it's funny because I don't, like, obviously, yes, we don't subscribe to the, you know, like, busy mom type thing. But I still kind of love, usually if there is a cookbook, I will skip through that kind of stuff or just skim it. But I actually always do like to read, like, the tips and tricks, because while most of them I'm just like, I don't need to bother with that. Sometimes you can learn really helpful stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
So I agree.
Just even if something isn't your steez, just give it a chance.
We try and keep an open mind mm-hmm. when we do these books. Like we've done a book that was inspired by gaming.
Yes.
Before.
The last time I picked up a remote control console or like a video game console, it was...
Was it Destiny? Was that the name of the game?
Yes, it was.
A game that I've never heard of.
No.
Yeah.
But like the last time I played a video game was when we had an Intellivision.
No, that's not true, because we had a... Did we have a PlayStation upstairs?
We have a Wii.
A Wii, that's what it was.
But I got that. Well, I mean, we've
more of the like fitness exercise stuff on there. It wasn't really like video gaming, I guess.
But I mean, we would do the bowling and
yeah,
stuff.
That's right.
And we've done it at your brother's house too.
Yeah.
But I mean, that kind of like that's not like gamer. Like,
yeah, you know. That's a world I'm not familiar uh-huh. with, and make no apologies about, because I'm 50 years old and I should not be playing video games.
Yeah. But anyway,
I did plenty of that in my youth.
Yeah. Our whole point is like, just even if something doesn't seem appealing to you outright, give it a chance. And that also goes for people too.
Are you saying not to judge a book by its cover?
I think I might be.
Oh.
What? Hey, I think I just, I think you just invented a new catchphrase.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm going to copyright it.
Let's do it.
Author Jessica Merchant has a popular social media blog called How Sweet Eats. And I think that's kind of how she gained her popularity. Mm-hmm. Has a ton of followers. She's had previous cookbooks, and this was her newest one. And I guess without further ado, let's talk about the dishes we made, and then we'll discuss them in a little bigger detail.
Sure. I'll just go down with a quick list. First, we did the stone fruit halloumi salad. Can I just say, our dog Olive walked by and just crop dusted. And
did she really?
It's disgusting.
You're on the other end of the table. It wasn't me, I swear.
I know it wasn't.
I know. That was pretty stealth of her though, because she did just kind of like really like breeze by, and just like as quick as she appeared, she was gone. And
I'm just
it was almost like it was intentional.
With her, and it probably
knowing
was.
Knowing her personality, wouldn't be surprised. All
okay, right. So stone fruit halloumi salad. Baked sweet potato soup, crispy orange cauliflower, lemon pea arugula and black pepper gnocchi, sheet pan cilantro lime chicken, and smoky stuffed poblanos.
You can tell we were intrigued by this book because we made a ton of stuff from it.
Yeah, so, we did.
It's always a good sign of a book. And when we were doing our intensive research for this podcast, like we always do, and I was paging through it, I was like, oh man, there's all these other things that we could have chosen, and mm-hmm. I'm sure it would have been great. So that might be a book that I want to hold on to and just like kind of revisit some of the recipes that we didn't get around to or something.
And I feel like a lot of this food is really great summer food because it is really vegetable focused. And yeah, well,
let's talk stone fruit halloumi salad.
All right.
So really the only time consuming step in this recipe was removing the pit from all the different stone fruit, which you generously agreed to do. You're quite the trooper.
Well, we did plums, apricots, nectarines, cherries, and here is, okay, so.
Did you do any pluots?
I think I did have a pluot.
Yeah.
There.
I just like saying that.
So I hate like one use devices. I think one of the few, well, yeah, I hate one use devices. The less of them that I can have, the better. So instead of getting like a cherry pitter, what I do is I take a wine bottle, set the cherry on top, and then push the pit through with the small end of a chopstick.
And it works great.
It works great. So little.
You're welcome, everyone.
Little tip from me to you.
Kitchen hack.
Yes. So yeah, let's talk about the salad.
I mean, nothing screams summer more than something like this, like stone fruit. And then there was a simple basil vinaigrette that goes on top of it. And then the base of the salad is arugula, and which actually I thought that worked really well with the stone fruit. So you have the sweetness of the stone fruit with like the kind of peppery notes of the arugula.
Yep. And the halloumi gets browned up in a nonstick skillet. And so then you get that nice little crust and you get the squeaky chew.
We are not halloumi merchants, nor are we shareholders in any halloumi corporations. But for the love of God, people, if you haven't tried halloumi and grilling it, do yourself a favor because it's life-changing.
It's super good. And and then also this the salad had a bunch of herbs in it. Like we had basil, parsley, thyme. So whole leaves of that were thrown in there, and then it gets finished off with that. I think we had this with a flatbread.
So you know what occurred to me from this recipe is how, and I think this is kind of an American thing, but like how narrowly defined a salad is here for most people. So if most people decided that they wanted to have a salad for lunch or dinner, it would probably consist of iceberg lettuce and then, you know, maybe like some bacon bits and maybe like the standard issue vegetables like cherry tomatoes and like some cucumber and then maybe like some Thousand Island dressing. And when you start to think more broadly of like what could compose a salad, such as stone fruits and then like grilling up some halloumi cheese and then throwing like, I think the key for this was like the fresh herbs too. So like just take a ton of like basil, parsley, thyme, chop it up really finely, put that on there for like this little flavor bomb. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
well,
like,
I don't know. I kind of disagree with you. I get that like that is your frame of reference because those are the kind of salads that we had growing up.
Right.
Like, but I think nowadays, like the fast casual chains and like places like Panera and stuff are putting like more sophisticated salads on their menu.
Okay. Maybe so, I'm not giving them a credit.
Yeah.
I feel like people have such a narrow definition of what makes a salad. And you could put just about anything that.
Absolutely.
You know, you could let your imagination run wild and really reimagine like what a salad should be.
Mm-hmm.
So. That was my takeaway. That was my hot take from this.
Okay. Duly noted.
Yeah.
Yeah. The salad was lovely. It was like, it screamed summer. It was sweet and peppery and herbaceous. And
one technical critique.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Is the accompanying photo for this recipe had some cherries that still had the pits in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which obviously are not edible. I'm assuming maybe it was just for like aesthetic reasons.
Yeah, which styling is fine, choice. Yeah. But
that was not the only instance in this book.
It does have, yeah, there are like discrepancies with the recipes and the photos.
And I'm sure, because the author, Jessica Merchant, takes her own photos, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming a lot of these probably appeared on her blog first before making it into this new cookbook. They could have evolved over time, mm-hmm. from the time, yes. the photo was posted to the time the recipe was, you know, developed and tested and made it into the book. And then they just did not update the photo. So minor thing, but yeah. we see it a lot in cookbooks, I feel like.
It's kind of a, it's a little bit of a pet peeve for me.
Yeah, because they omit ingredients. There's ingredients in there that aren't mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's preparations or discrepancies with like how something is, you know, cut or something, mm-hmm. but anyway, that's just the first one.
All right,
should we move on to the baked sweet potato soup?
Sure thing.
All right, so this was a pretty easy dish aside from the time it takes to roast a sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we'll probably get into when we discuss our rankings is how she takes a kind of unique approach to like dinner prep. And there's like this 10-minute, mm-hmm. you know, devote 10 minutes per day to your weekly prep so that it's not a gigantic project for one single day.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the sweet potato soup, you could roast the sweet potato earlier in the week, earlier in the day, whatever, and then just use it for this dish once it's ready. What else can we say about this?
Let's see. It had bacon and goat cheese, which yum.
How about that?
And then it had a little bit of smokiness from smoked paprika, and there was sautéed onions and garlic, which we cooked in the bacon fat. Super simple. The flavor was lovely.
I mean, this would be like if Wilco was the headliner, but then all of a sudden they said, oh, Elvis Costello and Tom Waits are also going to play on the show. Like the sweet potato.
I would say Tom Waits would be the headliner.
Oh, it doesn't matter. They're all like interchangeably awesome. So.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. There you go.
Sure. All right, the next thing.
I don't think you were getting what I was putting down.
I totally
picking up what I was putting down.
I was totally picking up what you were putting down.
All right.
But I have to say, for me personally, I would choose Tom Waits as the headliner.
You're
going to
rearrange the bill?
I absolutely am.
You're going to have to talk to the promoter.
I know. I'm not talking to anyone about it.
It's their decision, no. Really. All right.
You shush your mush. Okay, so the next thing we're doing is crispy orange cauliflower, which is, I guess, like kind of a take on orange chicken.
Yeah. Popular takeout menu item. I feel like cauliflower for the longest time was kind of underrated.
Well, probably until about like 8 years ago, yeah, I think.
Didn't get a lot of love. And now it's all the rage.
Well, when people start doing like keto diets and paleo diets, you know, like they make substitutions. So you've got like cauliflower pizza crust.
Cauliflower rice.
Yes. And actually, I usually have a bag or two of rice cauliflower in the freezer from Trader Joe's. They have a really nice, it's kind of, I think it's like a Mexican rice cauliflower. It tastes delicious.
I think we discussed it on the previous episode because we used it for
a lunch or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something.
But yeah, so, cauliflower, one of the things that stuck out about this book too is that she's really big on roasting vegetables to amp up the flavor.
She even had a paragraph. She's like, roast the heck out of them.
Yes.
Like, it's the best way to get the flavor.
And, you know, in spite of these recipes being pretty simple and easy, I don't feel like flavor was sacrificed.
Absolutely not.
And she was very attentive to make sure that everything had like a nice depth of flavor from the beginning, and something that you were kind of building in the dish. So
I do have to say, like, for me, this was the most fussy because you had to do, man, I need to turn off my devices.
Too many devices.
God.
Somewhere in our house, something is alerting us.
Usually we're very good about turning off everything, and we just didn't do that.
I wonder if I got those Wilco, Tom Waits, Elvis Costello tickets that I was bidding on.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right.
Anyway, you had to do like the whole like dredging stations and stuff, which tends to get messy and whatever. So
there was a companion sauce to this that had honey, chili, garlic, brown sugar, soy, and orange zest and orange juice. So it was kind of sweet and spicy. And then we served this with some coconut rice, which was great. And then we weren't pleased with the level of color on our cauliflower.
No, we weren't.
So we reached for
it. It was fully done. It was fully cooked, but it just didn't achieve the color that we thought it needed to be at.
Pirate's for the favorite photo. Color? So we reach for the butane torch. We don't have one of those fussy culinary torches anymore.
No.
We had one, and I can never start the goddamn thing. No. So now we have a regular old Home Depot special butane torch that I can also like solder some pipes with.
Yep, it's like...
Yep, and that thing will put a char on something in no time at all, like 5 seconds.
Yes, it will.
So that's what we use.
This was another one that I really, really liked, though.
Yeah.
So the next thing we did was lemon, pea, arugula, and black pepper gnocchi.
Okay.
All right.
You want to talk about your issue with gnocchi?
Okay, so I want to say I like gnocchi. I will always... I mean, I have no problems making it, but I have this thing with the texture of it. Like, even if it tastes really good, the texture still, like, weirds me out. So I can't fully enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, and even though I enjoy it, I can totally understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. It's not a mystery to me how someone could maybe find it a little off-putting.
Yeah, but this recipe was super easy. It called for like a pre-packaged gnocchi that you can get like in the refrigerator section.
Yep. And unlike previous preparations where we do it in the pan, this goes on a sheet tray.
Yeah.
The oven.
Well, it gets tossed really quick with like black pepper and some lemon juice and zest, and then it goes into the oven. And it cooks for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, you add frozen peas and arugula. And then once it's done, you put some grated Parmesan, some red pepper flake, lots of fresh chopped herbs. And we also grilled up some lemons to use for the photo. But the grilled lemon juice. The grilled lemon juice. That sounds so stupid.
We're generally not fans of non-edible garnishes.
Yes.
But in this case, we made an exception because it looked really lovely in the photo.
Yes. But I also like the juice from the grilled lemons, too.
Yeah.
I think it adds like another little dimension of flavor.
But if you're going to put like an entire sprig of rosemary atop
that
something.
That drives me bananas. Yeah. Bananas.
Not a fan of non-edible garnishes.
So, yeah, this is us being like a little bit hypocritical.
Note to chefs. Knock it off.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
Or like when you see the top of the pineapple on a fruit tray.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, the flavor of this was lovely. And I ate some. And I enjoyed it. But then I was like, ooh, it's kind of getting to me.
Wasn't your jam?
No, it wasn't.
I had it the following day for lunch and it was delicious.
Of course it was.
Let's talk sheet pan cilantro lime chicken. We made like three different sheet pan dishes from this book because there was plenty within the pages. This was great. The only substitution we made was chicken thighs instead of the chicken breast, which is just a personal preference.
Generally, unless a recipe is like poach a chicken breast because usually it will be cut very nicely or something. Other than that, we will go to chicken thighs.
Where the flavor's at, yo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't get dried out.
And then there was this really vibrant cilantro lime mixture that mm-hmm. we drizzled on the chicken before baking. And then there was some whole garlic cloves. And then it called for thinly sliced green bell pepper. I think we've mentioned before we're not fans. So we used poblanos.
Mm-hmm.
You get the same color.
The very, very mildest hint of heat.
Yeah. Don't get us started on green peppers.
No.
And then some red onion went in there, and they were actually like roasted on the sheet tray this time. Mm-hmm. So there's not raw red onion issue, which is something else we're kind of vehemently opposed to. And then here's another issue with one of the recipe photos. Frozen corn, while mentioned in the recipe, were nowhere to be found in the companion photograph. We added ours toward the end of the cooking mm-hmm. time. They didn't really need a lot of time to cook up.
We added that with a little bit of, what did we add with it? Oh, cotija cheese.
I think it's cotija.
Cotija?
Yeah.
And sure. And then we had some more grilled citrus
yeah.
that we threw in there.
Sliced jalapenos made mm-hmm. an appearance. And then there, you do reserve some of that cilantro lime mixture. So make sure, for the love of all things holy, that you don't like put that in contact with raw chicken. Like,
no.
Set a little bit aside first.
Yeah.
Then brush it all over the chicken before it goes in the oven.
Nobody needs to be cross-contaminated.
That would ruin a dinner party.
Yes, it would.
Yes. You don't have enough bathrooms in your house.
Could you imagine what an asshole you would feel like? Like, it is my worst nightmare to have people over for dinner, cook them food, and then you find out they all got sick.
I'm sure it's every chef's nightmare.
Oh, my God.
Well, now you have to worry about like people not getting sick from your food, but getting COVID because right? they won't put on a goddamn mask.
Yep.
People. All right. Before I jump on my soapbox again.
He's turning into grandpa on the soapbox.
Let's move on to our last dish, smoky stuffed poblanos.
So Johnny made me stuffed peppers one time.
Go ahead.
They weren't great.
No, they weren't, admittedly.
They were filled with like ground beef, I think, and rice, and the rice was undercooked.
I think there were some gummy bears in there too.
No, there were no gummy bears in there.
This was kind of early on in our relationship when I was still kind of navigating cooking, and I was not a very confident cook, but I thought like, oh, stuffed peppers. I've seen that on TV. I'll make this. Not even thinking that this probably wasn't your jam.
No.
And it was like stuffed red bell pepper. Yeah, it was gross. I don't remember exactly what was in it. Ugh.
I mean, I appreciate you trying.
Yeah.
So...
So imagine my surprise when I'm looking through this book, and this was actually one of the recipes that Victoria had kind of like bookmarked mm-hmm. as a possible a feature. So there you go.
And it was filled with cooked jasmine rice, some ground beef, cumin. It had cumin, paprika, some chili powder.
I think it's safe to say I did not add any of that to my attempt.
It was still when he was like getting to know spices. Like yep. he was kind of accepting that you need to use them.
We were acquainted, but we weren't friends.
Right.
We weren't BFFs.
And the photo had cheese in it. The recipe did not call for cheese, but we had some mozzarella on hand, so we decided, why not?
Yeah. And then there was an avocado crema,
mm-hmm.
which went atop this, and then, as well as a little quick pico de gallo. So this was probably one of the more involved recipes we mm-hmm. did just because of the different components. But even with that, like nothing took more than a few minutes to throw together.
Yeah.
So even though it was like, you know, hey, add this avocado crema, add this pico de gallo. Fine. Another 10 minutes of work.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Well, those are things that you can make ahead of time as well.
Yeah.
So.
Well, before we jump into our rankings, let's discuss the most critical Amazon reviews for this book. And I found two.
All right. You want me to start with the first one?
Sure. Go for it.
First one is Marilyn Walker. She gave it 2 out of 5 stars.
I hate her already.
She said, disappointing. Every meal seems like a side dish. Where's a hearty meal? Very disappointed that I fell for hype and ordered this book. Okay, number one, you got a goddamn sheet pan of food.
Yeah, how is this not enough food for anyone? And, I mean, we'll talk about this in the rankings. Every recipe fed 2 to 4 people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, unless you're cooking for a family and they all have hearty appetites, like, this should have been plenty of food.
Maybe it's just because, like, the vegetable dishes, like, vastly outnumbered the meat and seafood and poultry dishes.
Sure.
Like,
is that a bad thing?
No, absolutely not. But I get that some people don't feel like they've really eaten until they've gotten like their meat and potato. Like,
there's plenty of people that want meat in 3 or meat in 2.
Yeah.
And if they don't get it, there's a mutiny. All right. And then another one, 2 out of 5 stars said, avid fan, disappointed. I have drooled and dreamed of being able to make every recipe in Jessica's previous books. I fell in love with her other books because of the way the ingredients were used to make tastes that I hadn't even imagined. Making recipes very unique. I follow her weekly blog also. I felt that many of the recipes in Everyday Dinners were recipes that have become mainstays in other cookbooks that I own. And no dessert section. I will be sending my copy back. Yeah, she wants to speak to Jessica's manager.
It's kind of a bummer, though, that she's like calls herself a big fan and she's disappointed.
I mean, I don't feel as if this was like big departure from her social media or her other books.
No,
so,
I don't either.
I did. We'll talk about this in the rankings. I did. The lack of dessert section did not go unnoticed.
Yeah,
I thought that was, you know, obviously it's a conscious choice on her part, but there you go.
Okay.
Well, you want to talk about our rankings?
Sure.
Let's start with food photography and styling. Okay. What'd you give it, Victoria?
I gave it a 5.
Okay.
It's not overly styled, which like kind of keeps on track with the whole point of the book. Lots of macro shots, lots of fresh ingredient shots. Mostly light backgrounds, and it was pretty much all food photos except for at the very beginning where she did her introduction, and and I really thought the food looked beautiful, which is why I can appreciate that everything was kind of plain too, because it really did, like, I felt like her recipes highlighted the food, and I felt that the photos did the same thing. So, yeah.
All right.
That's that.
I'm sorry. What'd you give it?
I gave it 5.
Okay. I did as well.
Oh.
So there were several what I called like raw ingredient photos of, you know, works in progress, ingredients that were going into something. A lot of overhead shots, usually with a utensil tucked inside. So I don't know if you noticed that, but for all of the soup recipes, there was a spoon tucked into the bowl or like a fork tucked into the salad, which I think subconsciously kind of creates this like very inviting kind of meal. I'm sure it's, you know, people smarter than me would be able to explain, but it's probably a food styling trick. Most of the sheet pan slash casserole. That guy's a casserole. Casserole dishes are more like close up as opposed to like some of the other ones that had a little bit more distance and accoutrements on them. All the photos I felt definitely had kind of a social media quote unquote feel to them, which makes sense because that's where her beginnings are. And I'm sure a lot of these were probably shared on social media prior to going in the book. Kind of reminiscent of what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought there was like some similarities between how she styled and photographed the food, which I appreciated.
Sure.
The colors were natural looking without being like artificially like amplified. Like you said, very unfussy styling, lots of crumbs and drips from the sauces and dressings. I really love the props and surfaces that she chose to photograph. But really, this is all about the food. She could have easily included photos of herself and her family. And there's a couple photos within the
book. But those are at the beginning.
Yeah, it's not excessive. But she chose to focus on the food and the recipes. And I thought that was like a great... Because we've worked through other books where it's just like one candid photo of, you know, the person after another. And this was not that kind of book. And it very well could have been if she had made that choice. So... There you go.
Sure.
Five.
All right. What'd you give it for design and layout?
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
All the recipes fit on one page. There's a nice bold title. All the dishes serve 2 to 4 people, so there's some consistency within the portions. All the recipes revolve around this concept that we mentioned earlier that's kind of this 10-minute meal prep, which is kind of the cornerstone of the book.
Yep.
Where and when you can fit this in throughout your day rather than attempting to do it all at once. Because we've all read those kind of blogs and cookbooks where it's like very centered on meal prep. And it's like, take a Sunday and spend your entire Sunday prepping meals for the whole
day. It's a waste of a day.
It is. While this concept is not optional, it's flexible, which is what I thought was kind of unique. The author plans for and shops for about 3 to 4 meals each week and then leaves some open days for pantry meals, takeout, restaurant visits, which I think is kind of how we plan and shop.
For the most part, we'll usually do like 4 or 5 meals and then we'll do like a pantry or a takeout.
Yeah. And I thought that was like a good compromise, more practical. And the reasons for this, I thought this was really interesting because she had kind of a little like bullet point list of like, I want variety. I get bored. I want to eat what I want in the moment. I want something fresh. I don't want to eat the same thing for lunch every day. And that's a big one for me personally is like when you do this meal prep stuff, that's great if you're fine with eating the same thing for the next 5 days for lunch. That's not me.
Well, you're the human garbage can when it comes to lunch. So
yes, but also you know you don't want to spend an entire day on your weekend cooking, especially if you have a family. That's your days off and that's your leisure time. So like I thought this was a really refreshing approach. It's like you know it might be impossible to block out a 4 or 5 hour period of time on a weekend to do meal prep, but you could certainly block out 10 minutes on this day, 10 minutes here between meetings, 10 minutes, you know, when you get home, whatever, you know, and it makes it a little bit more manageable. And I thought that was really clever.
Okay.
She talks a lot about cooking without a recipe. And just how you become comfortable and skilled at doing that. And I thought there was some really great tips there because I think a lot of this book is designed around trying to get people a little bit more comfortable and confident in the kitchen.
Yeah, the whole first part of the book it kind of addresses that. And like she's very supportive and, you know, encourages people to...
And she's quick to point out that, like, there's no shortcut. You just have to get in there and start cooking. And over time, you'll get more confident. You'll get more comfortable. You'll learn tips and tricks. And I thought that was, like, great advice. Because I think a lot of people just want that immediacy of, I want to do this and I want it to turn out. And
absolutely.
And it doesn't always work that way. You just have to you have to put in the work. You got to roll up your sleeves and get to work. Otherwise, I mentioned the chapters are divided into things like sauces and dressings, meatless, which was by far the largest section, and then just all the different, you know, proteins like poultry, pork, beef, seafood, and then a section devoted to side dishes.
Yep.
But yeah, four. I thought this was a good design and layout.
Sure.
What'd you have?
I gave it a four as well. The recipes are really concise. And some of the intros also have like mention like substitutes that you can make, or, you know, just a tip to like maybe make it a little easier. And then at the, and also at the bottom of the page, like you were talking how it's based around the 10-minute meal prep, on every page there's like a tip as to how you can like,
right, like this is what you can do ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. And also, like we were talking, the beginning section just kind of walks, you know, walks through like how to become a better cook and everything. So yeah, I mean, you covered a lot of the stuff that
she had some great advice. I don't know if I covered that, but you know, it was like learn the basics, familiarize yourself with spices, like we were talking earlier. Get comfortable with spices. Don't be a perfectionist. I think that's what a lot of people overlook when cooking at home, cooking from a book, cooking from a recipe, is it's not a pass-fail situation.
No.
You know, there might be something that didn't turn out maybe as you expected or as you had hoped. It's still edible. You're not going to have to call for takeout.
Yeah. Or if something doesn't look like you expected it, you know, big deal. Is it delicious? If it is, great. Eat it. Yeah. Then you succeeded.
Yeah.
Degree of difficulty. I gave it a one. I thought I would like wholeheartedly give this book to a novice.
Yeah.
And be like, here you go. You're going to have fun with this. Mm-hmm. Instructions were really clear. There were no difficult cooking techniques. And for as easy as the recipes were, like, well, I'll get onto that later. But what did you give it?
I gave it a one as well.
Okay.
Wow. We're on the same page so far. They couldn't be easier. There's no baking or desserts to complicate things. Lots of soups and salads that require very little time or cooking skill or technique. Like you said, this is the perfect beginner cookbook, or maybe someone with a family that's looking for meal inspiration, especially with a focus on fresh, healthy ingredients. And even though the recipes were fairly quick and simple, I didn't feel like flavor was compromised at all.
No. So like, that's kind of rolling in. Okay. So the rolling into taste.
Yeah.
What did you give it?
I gave it a five.
Yes.
No issues. And I mean, we'll talk about this Chinese food made easy in a future episode. I feel like in their effort to make all these recipes super simple and quick, some of the flavor was sacrificed. Whereas with this book, they're still quick and simple, but she was very mindful of still building up the flavors from the ground up and making sure that flavor was not compromised.
Yes. I gave it a five as well.
This is like only about the second or third time, I think, where we have like the exact same rankings for everything. That's awesome. I think you looked at my sheets when it was gone.
No, I promise you I didn't. The food is like, it seriously is all about the food. And I love when a recipe has the seasoning spot on. Like there's no add a little bit of this, add a little bit of less of that, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you like something, add more of it.
Yeah,
if
I think that comes like with experience.
Yeah. But like these recipes were so solid. And another thing about this book is the first section is recipes for like sauces or dressings. Mm-hmm. There's 30 recipes, and it's kind of it's an important component to everything, to these recipes, because they are flavor builders and yes. flavor bombs. And it's a great way to add flavor. So I really love that she was unabashed in her love for those.
And very mindful of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Okay.
I think that's great.
Yes. If you enjoyed the show, please rank and review us. Follow us on the socials. At our Instagram is at @we_cook_books. And our Facebook is at We Cook Books.
All right. You know what time it is.
Make me laugh.
All right. Joke time. Hey, Victoria, why did the hipster chef burn his tongue?
Ugh, why?
He ate his food before it was cool. Right? I mean, Lollapalooza was just here in Chicago a few weeks ago. I figured it was timely. So.
Sure.
There you go. All right. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Wear a mask.
Stay hungry.
Bye.